The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Boston Red Sox were just swept by the Arizona Diamondbacks, being outscored 23-8, losing all three. The Red Sox are now 67-62 in third place in the AL East, 6.5 games back in the AL East again, but behind the Yankees and the Orioles. We're fourth in the wild card standings behind the Royals, 4.5 games behind them, and then the Mariners, 6.5. The Rays are 7. We are so close. You can find us on Twitter/X at Bastards_Boston. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you? And give us that ever so famous temperature check number.
You can find me at JTShill20 on Twitter, and more of our listeners are, and I really enjoying the engagement. I am barely hanging on. I was hot and at the end of the game, but I think I've calmed myself down so that I can be rational here this evening. Last week I was a 5.5. I'm a 4.35.
Wow. I think that's the most drastic drop we've had from you, Jeremy. And our other host is, of course, the famous Terrence Cushman. Terry, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you? And because I don't want you to get emotional, feel free to give us your temperature check as well.
I'm a consistent 7. I'm just chronically pissed off.
How can that possibly be?
You
can't still be a 7 after the series. Are you kidding me?
We are 1 minute in and already crying BS.
We got swept. Why wouldn't I be a 7?
I'm shocked.
7 is reason for optimism. Are you out of here? This is crazy. All right.
So then I'm a 3. Okay.
Okay. There we go.
I can accept that.
I thought it was higher is worse. I'm the dude that never goes to the doctors anyway. So
okay.
I don't get vaccinated. I don't get anything. So I can be found at CushmanMLB. On Twitter. Charlie's losing it right now. Let's see. What else do we have? Instagram. On Facebook and TikTok, Terry Talks Sox. I'm getting addicted to TikTok and having some fun with it. So almost daily content on there. And yeah, I'm good. I won my tournament today, by the way. And I had to beat the guy who's almost universally regarded to be the number one player on the East Coast. So he's kind of like my mentor as well, but I beat him in the finals to win the tournament. So pretty pumped about that.
Sorry, Terry, for those that are new listeners, what is it that you won? Because they may not know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So it's going to get nerdier as we go here, but I play cribbage at the national level. It's a card game. Most New Englanders probably know what cribbage is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I've played it competitively for about 20 years now and play tournaments usually at least once a month or so somewhere in the Southeast. Going to Vegas in November for a really big one. But yeah, I am performing better than the Boston Red Sox.
That is a very low bar, Terrence. So the fact that you're even winning anything right now is a plus. But that's not how it's always been for the Red Sox. We've just been really, really unlucky. Also, Jeremy and I have had a really bad streak of predictions. we actually have a new season high of 7 straight predictions incorrect. And collectively, the pod is struggling because we keep picking the wrong team to win that game. But that's besides the point. Not only are the Red Sox losing, we're losing too. We are going to slide right into our Jeremy, go ahead.
I would just like to report, as a result, I've quit gambling on baseball. So
perfect. Thank you, Jeremy. Care,
which is probably nobody.
Yeah, well, that, thank you for coming to Jeremy's TED Talk on that one. So naturally, since we did not do well in this series, this is probably one of the worst series that we've performed in. We're going to lead off with our duds. So Terry, why don't you hit us with yours?
You had to go to me right away, didn't you? All right. So mine is going to be Brian Baio, the guy we thought was going to be the next coming of, I don't know.
Pedro.
I didn't want to say Pedro.
I know, but that's what people are thinking.
If he's like Pedro Light, I mean, we crushed it with Baio. But so he had a rough outing, lasted 5 1/3, gave up 7 hits, 5 earned runs, 4 walks, only struck out 2. And basically got off on a bad foot. 2 singles right away to the first 2 Diamondbacks batters, Corbin Carroll, Jake McCarthy. Then he walked Jock Peterson, and then Josh Bell walked, which brought in the first run of the game. And Baio kind of settled down a little bit. And then, let's see, down in the, I think it was the 5th inning, it got out of control again. Nope, it was the 6th inning. And yeah, he got a ground out to Josh Bell. Then he walked Gurriel. Then a single to Castillo. Then Eugenio Suarez drove in 2. And it was just a rough outing. He'd been pitching pretty well. You know, he had a nice month of August and seemed to be turning a corner after an extremely rough first half. And I think he's just, hopefully he's going to figure it out, but he's been very consistently inconsistent over the course of the entire season. So I expected he was probably going to do well. And don't forget, the Diamondbacks didn't have their 2 best hitters. Walker and Marte were out, and they've been red hot. They're the hottest team in baseball, but I didn't think this was going to be a tough lineup for Baio, and pretty ugly. Got the series started off on a bad note in game 1. We ended up losing that game 12-2. And I don't know what else you can say about that.
Yeah. Jeremy.
Yeah, I have a larger point here, but I'm going to save it for my dud. So what I'm going to say about Baio is 11 base runners in 5 1/3 inning, throwing 88 pitches. It's almost like you're trying to get people on base. There's way too much traffic. And obviously that's reflected in the 5 earned runs. This was a huge series, and Baio had been put in this spot, similar spot, where you just need innings and a decent start in the last 30 days. And he had been coming through, you know, now I won't call him a stopper, but he was starting to play that role a little bit. And he did the opposite here on Friday. So it's a tough start. It set the tone for the whole series, in my opinion. And, you know, there's a larger issue here. And I'll save it for my dud, and that, so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, for Baio, this is his worst performance in the last 2 months. He's only allowed 5 earned. I mean, it's crazy to say only allowed 5, but that's unfortunately been the case for some of our starters. The last time he allowed 5 was against the Oakland A's, 5 1/3, 5 runs on 9 hits. So this one was a little bit better, 5 runs on 7 hits. The concerning one for me was the 4 walks. That was the big one, you know. Jeremy just kind of touched up on that. He's hit that 4 number just once this year, and he ended up winning that game because he was able to limit the damage on the base paths. But this one just it's a crooked number, you know, allowing an earned run an inning. But the wheels didn't really start to fall off until the 6th inning. So when you look back at that entire game, in the sixth inning, everything was fine through five. You know, five innings were only down 2-1, and then you've got a walk after a ground out. Then there was the throwing error. And then after that, he couldn't settle back down. It was a single, knocked in a run, double, knocked in a run, then another infield single, another run. And it was one thing after another. And I think it's a head game with him. I really, really do. I think that Brian Baio, I think he needs like a mental coach, because the stuff can be there. We've seen it there. And I don't think, you know, if you get injured, you see a therapist, you see a physiotherapist. If your head's not right, you got to see a mental therapist or something like that to get your head right, because Baio does have the talent. You don't win 11 or 12 games by accident. That's, you know, typically. I mean, his ERA has been kind of ugly this year. It's, you know, not something that I'm going to pretend that is, you know, great. Your ERA is almost 5, but you haven't really been doing yourself any favors. It's just been a little bit of bad luck. But I mean, ultimately, we're expecting Baio to be that guy that can shut the door. And unfortunately, you know, come the fifth, sixth inning for some of our starters, we're back to that page in the book where we're not getting quality starts. We're having problems in the fifth and sixth innings, and we're not getting the job done. Runners are getting left on base. They're walking people. They're hitting people. You got pass balls, wild pitches. And it's one thing after another. And you can't, you know, like Terry knows my expression, you can't live on that. You need to be able to, you know, limit the damage, and allowing 5 runs and 5 1/3, not really setting your team up for success, because the Red Sox now are a team that if they don't score 7 or 8 runs, they're not winning games. And if you score 2 runs in a game, 1 run in a game, 4 in another game, or 5 in another game, guess what? That's not enough runs, because the pitching staff can't get it done, not on a consistent basis. So unfortunately, yeah, we're going to lose games if we don't score a minimum of 6 runs. That's just where we're at right now. Yeah, Terry, go ahead.
You mentioned the mental aspect, and I've mentioned that previously. I mean, it's pretty obvious when you watch him, he just kind of loses his composure. And he spent a lot of time with Pedro, and, you know, Pedro's tried to help him along, their fellow countrymen, you know, both from the Dominican Republic. And but the one major difference between the two was Pedro on the mound was like a man possessed. Like, he was going to get you out and he was going to come after you. Baio just doesn't have that. He just doesn't have that edge to him while he's out there. He kind of looks like a kid, you know, just a kid on the mound, just trying to make it work. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And I don't know what else you can say. And coming into this start, it was 4 out of his last 6, he went at least 6 innings or more. And he had a 3.59 ERA in those 6 starts leading into this one. So he was on a groove. And that actually started mid-July. July 14th against the Kansas City Royals was when the upswing kind of started. And he didn't give up more than 3 earned in any of those starts before this one. So, I mean, I guess if he gets it back on track this week against Toronto, and that would be a good team to do it. They've traded some pieces. I guess we're fine. One thing I did want to bring up, you know, we've praised Breslow for his extension of Rafaela, which looks really good at the moment. And, you know, the ceiling still looks like it's pretty high and, you know, there's room to grow there. He extended Baio, and I'm not saying I hate it, but it doesn't, you know, we didn't crush it with that one so far, at least. Next year, he'll have a chance to flip the narrative and perhaps everything will be fine. But his deal, he doesn't really start making a lot of money until I think it's 2026. So he's making $1 million something this year, goes up to 2.6 next year, and then it starts to jump after that significantly. 6.1, 8.6, 16 million in 2028, 19 in 2029. That's his last Actually, well, I shouldn't say it's his last guaranteed year, because in 2030 he's got a player option, which essentially is guaranteed if they want it to be. But so just sharing that observation, I mean, you couldn't, I don't blame the Red Sox for doing it, but it just, it hasn't had the same effect as it has with Rafaela.
So for the fear of us going down that rabbit hole of us talking about contracts that were done at the right time for a specific amount of money, 6 years, $55 million for Bayo at the time, where he's going to be here for the next 5 years. I've got no complaints with that. I'm totally cool with that deal, because there's no way a deal like this is going to be, you know, really, really poor. He doesn't make the big bucks until 2028, making almost $17 million. That's not even premier starter money. So that's not bad. So even if he continues to pitch like this for another year, albeit I hope it's not like this, if he's still like this, where he's in that kind of 11 to 13 win range and ERA of the 4 to 4.5, I'm not hating it. I'd like it to be a little bit better. But, I mean, there is the expectation that he's going to be an ace. There is the expectation that he's going to be able to, you know, be one of the next coming premier pitchers for the Boston Red Sox. But it just hasn't happened as of yet. We've seen moments. We've seen glimpses. I'm hoping he can just put it together on a more consistent basis, because right now it's nerve-wracking. I mean, this is a dice roll. 50%, it's going to be a win. 50%, it's not, because the walks are an issue. The runs and hits allowed are an issue. The one thing that he's had going in his favor is the home run ball. He's only allowed two this month. You know, there was a span early this year where we had some starters who didn't allow a home run all month. So there are going to be some things that go your way and some things that don't go your way. The kid's still 25 years old, plenty of time to grow, plenty of time to learn. And I just want to, you know, enjoy the process with him. You know, it's going to be one of those diamond in the roughs, hopefully, assuming all things are, you know, going the right direction. Anything else that you gents want to add? Yeah, go ahead.
I'd still give him the contract.
Absolutely. So
he's learning to pitch at the big league level. And they've asked a number of players to do that, including Rafaela. So
yep.
You expect him to get better, especially as he builds up his innings to approach 180, 200. So.
Right. Absolutely agree.
Let me just ask you guys this. And again, like I said, I'm not ready to rip up the contract, but let's say Bayo was either a Dodger, a Brave, or an Astro. Does he, and he's had the same season he's had with us, but with those teams, does he stay on the roster all year, or will one of those teams have optioned him? Because I think it's the latter. I think he's sent down to figure it out.
I don't necessarily think so. He's done better than certain pitchers that the Dodgers have. The Dodgers optioned, not Walker Buehler. Not Gavin Miller. Stoney there. It's another Miller. Yeah. Bobby Miller, who went down. And he was doing really bad. I mean, he was getting shelled. Bayo's not getting shelled. He's just being, as you said, consistently inconsistent.
He's not commanding it.
That's the problem. I mean, last game he had a no hitter until the home run and the single. Today, or, you know, this series, excuse me, a little bit different. So the problem is that inconsistency. You know, the walk numbers were a little high. This is the second time this year they've walked four guys. I'd like to see that number go down. I like the home run number being zero. And, you know, if he can give us six innings, I'm not asking you to strike out 10, give me six every start. But if you can give us six innings, allowing one to two runs, that's pretty much the expectation of a starting pitcher nowadays, especially with the impending new rules that could potentially happen with this 6-inning minimum, 100 pitch minimum. You can pull them if they allow four earned, or they've thrown 100 pitches. You know, gone are the days of the Randy Johnson's 135, 145 pitches in a game. That's just not happening anymore. It doesn't matter. Even for a no hitter, it's just not going to happen. So yeah, I don't think he would be optioned if he was a Dodger. They'd figure out a way to make him, you know, be great. He's not going to get optioned. It's just really
unlucky. I couldn't disagree more. The only reason why he's made all of his starts is we have no organizational depth. Any team that has depth within the their system at some point this season would have optioned him. It would have probably been earlier. And remember, we did that exact same with Winkowski. We sent him down to get right. I think he had a mid-2 ERA in Worcester, and then he came back. And I don't see why, when his ERA was 5.5 earlier this year, you wouldn't go send him down to figure it out, work on his mechanics and throwing strikes to bring him back up once he gets right. So I disagree. I don't think it would limit it to those teams. I think a team with organizational depth would have optioned him to give him a chance to get right. The only thing that gives me any reticence to that is if he has a 10-cent head, you could ruin him, especially after you paid him. And I think we talked about that topic with Rafaela earlier this year, although it never got to that point with him. That would be my only question mark. And unfortunately, we don't know. We'd have to leave that to Cora in the front office to see if that would be a reason to not option him. But I think he's only been here consistently because we don't have anybody else.
So I'm going to throw another wrench into this one because I hear what you're saying. I don't agree with it. And here's the thing. Brian Baio, electric in the month of April, 2.91 ERA, went 2-1 in that month, did fine in the month of May, went 3-1 in the month of May. We're sitting at a 4.18 ERA. I would love to know the temperature of the games starting at the beginning of June in relation to May and April. It sounds like a weird thing, but when the weather is warmer, balls fly out a little further, balls get hit a little bit harder. And I think that's something that he needs to make that adjustment on. That's part of that like mental fortitude that we need to see him have. And I would love to see the temperature because, you know, in April, it's not 85 degrees, 90 degrees. You know, in Pittsburgh in April, it's not 80. So the difference is, you know, in Oakland in late July, in LA in mid-July, it's not cold. It's warm. So in some of these games, I'm looking at it right now for the month of July against LA. He was in LA, allowed 3 runs in 6 innings. He allowed 3 runs in 3 straight games against Oakland in Boston. I would love to know what that temperature was on July 9th, allowed 5 and 5 1/3 in Miami, 1 run in 6 2/3. But Miami's an anomaly because they have, they can cover that stadium up and they can, you know, change and manipulate that temperature in Miami. It could be hot as hell. You'd never know. Because inside that stadium, it's a little bit different. So I think that's something else. I hear what you're saying about organizational depth and whatnot, but yeah, you're right. We don't have it. It's not really a part of the plan for the Boston Red Sox. It's almost like we don't believe in it. But we also had a lot of major injuries at the beginning of the year. We also had one of our acquisitions during the trade deadline go down with what is probably career ender. I don't think he's coming back. And if he does, I don't want to see him back in Boston. And I can't stress that enough. Anything else you gents want to add?
Yeah, I mean, the month of June wasn't good for him. I mean, he was walking at least 3 every time, except right. Once. I just think the command is bad. He couldn't get through 5 full in a lot of those starts. He was blessed with a lot of run support. That's why he was leading the team, probably still is leading the team in wins. You know, and then Toronto torched him in that last start before July, 2 1/3, 7 earned. So the dude's just been a mess. He's just been a mess. And we couldn't option him because then Cooper Criswell is the next man up and there's no real record of trust there. Like they're not even going to commit to him in this 5-game series we're about to have with Toronto. And, you know, so his role has changed. He's been optioned a couple of times. He's been a bulk guy and I don't know. I look at Baio as an asset and I just think it's better if he would figure it out in the minors. We just haven't had the luxury of that.
I hear it. I mean, what we're not talking about yet is the major injuries that we've had and had to deal with to the start of our season. You know, you lose Lucas Giolito, gone. You lose Garrett Whitlock, who only gave you 18 innings, gone. You know, those are two arms that we were really counting on, really depending on. If we had both of those guys, yeah, maybe you can.
You probably would have. He probably would have.
You might be able to, but that's just not one of the situations that we're able to, you know, deal with right now. Moving on from Baio, Jeremy, who was your dud for this one?
Tanner Houck, 6. Well, let me take a step back. Same situation, right? You've got pretty dismantled Friday, Saturday, Sunday. you pitched in the All-Star game. You've been the preeminent starter for this team all, you know, for most of the year, at least till the All-Star break. And you come out in a, I don't want to say a must-win game, but you need it. Your team needs it. Six innings, seven hits, six runs, all earned, four walks. Again, 11 base runners in six innings on 91 pitches, raising his ERA to 3.23 and his WHIP 1.18. I mean, it's just so incredibly frustrating that this team can't get outs in big moments. And the home run to Suarez that hit the light tower where they used to have the Coke bottles, you can't make that mistake. And I know that it's a mislocation. He wasn't trying to middle a sweeper, but you can't, in the biggest moments, your senses have to be the sharpest, and you just spin one up there on a guy who's already hit a grand slam in the series. It's a non-competitive pitch. I'd rather him miss off the plate. And we fail to get that stopper start that we need. So this is my larger point that I skipped on Dale. This team does not have an ace. I don't care that Hauk made the All-Star game. I don't care that Bayo got the contract and rewarded with the opening day start. We don't have a Pedro, a Schilling, a Beckett. We don't have that guy that you can say it's bad right now, but tomorrow we have blank. And I know you guys don't want, not you guys maybe, but the listeners don't want me to go off on the organization again. But this is a product of not wanting to spend the money outside the organization to bring someone in to be a preeminent starter. Because again, this organization has failed to generate starting pitching talent that could get to that level. You have to admit that. Right? So we don't have a guy in the system that's ever going to be better than a two or a three. Then you go get the guy. You're the Boston Red Sox. You own your own TV station. You pull from 6.5 states. Go get the guy. It's embarrassing that this team that, you know, again, we went and created a shopping list and it was good checking off all those things. Well, where's the preeminent starting pitcher that's going to give you a chance? If we even do make the playoffs, who's going to pitch the do or die game? Right? I mean, it's pathetic. And look, I like Hauk and I like him projecting forward. And I like that he's growing his innings, you know, because he's already passed his career high. I like Bayo. I like Crawford. I like Pivetta. You know, the latter two was four or five starters. But we don't have that guy. So you're facing a very good team, a team that was in the World Series last year. This is a must-win game. This start goes to the Schilling, the Pedro, the Beckett, et cetera, that we've had on this in this franchise forever, and we just don't have it. And there was no attempt to get it. It's pathetic. It's inexcusable. And this is the result. This is the result of everything we've talked about the offseason, the trade deadline, and everyone wants to call us negative, but this is a failure from the front office to support the on-field product. And today, Sunday, was a prime example that we don't have it and that this roster is flawed and falling short.
Falling and failing. You're not wrong. Terrence, anything you'd like to add?
Before I give my take, when do you think Hauk got his last win? Just throw a date out there. It doesn't even have to be exact.
6/13. I was going to say the same thing.
June 13th.
Mm-hmm.
I would have said June 25th.
Yeah, it's June 13th.
Okay, I should
know the answer.
Yeah, because I was going to talk about this for my point. Terry and I are on the same brain.
So
it's dangerous.
I misframed the question. Okay, so that's when he got his last win. What I meant to really ask was, when did the Red Sox get their last win when he was the starter? And I'll just say it at this point.
Sure.
It was July 11th.
It's disgusting.
Against Oakland. Yeah, we won that game 7-0.
Yeah.
Here's another troubling thing. In five of Hauk's last nine starts, 5 of the 9 last starts, he's walked more guys than he struck out. Now, that's a combination of two things. He's obviously, there's a high walk rate there, and he's not striking out a lot of guys. So it's, you know, collectively just kind of a big problem. This is not April and May, Tanner Houck. I've said recently, that guy's not coming back. He's pitched, I don't even know how many innings now. I'm not even going to look it up, but he's way past it. If this series doesn't go well, skip a couple of his starts. Just skip a couple of his starts. He's got to be over 150 innings by now, maybe even 160.
158 and two-thirds. Yep.
Okay. So yep. Two more starts gets him to 170. That's a good number. A lot of pitchers don't hit that anymore. 200 used to be the benchmark. That was a full season. Now, you know, the bar's been lower. We're using openers more. Injuries are up. So, you know, pitchers just aren't getting the innings that they were a decade or so ago. But the dude just fell apart. And, we've mentioned this a lot recently. At least a small part of that, I think, is Andrew Bailey. The game planning isn't great, especially the third time through the order. So that needs to be adjusted. But Houck, as a starting pitcher, he has to have a plan B. There has to be a plan B. If I'm not locating this, I'm going to attack him this way, or I'm going to attack him the other way. There's just something, there's just a flaw in the system here. And hopefully over the winter, Bailey reevaluates how he's going to lead this pitching program going into next year, because it wasn't super effective this year. And granted, he didn't have a ton to work with, as Jeremy was pointing out, but it's a terrible start. And I gave a prediction on the midweek, and I put it on TikTok as well. I think Breslow will be back next year, but I think somebody else is coming into that front office. Some senior guy that's going to have a lot of influence. I think there's going to be a major addition there. And I know we have Epstein already, but I think it's going to be someone younger, someone more up with the trends, and someone who's probably had a lot of impact somewhere else. I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, you know, really quickly, because you and I were talking about Houck's numbers, and one of the points I wanted to make, outside of the fact that for him, this was his second bad performance in the month of August. You touched up on the fact that he's had several more starts with walks exceeding the number of strikeouts. I mean, there was at least one game where he only got one strikeout. It was so weird. That was the Houston game. He allowed one run on four hits, only one strikeout. Just really, really weird. And I don't think he's really been the same since that All-Star game. I mean, he gave up that 3-run moonshot, and it's like lingering after effects of giving a dinger up to Shohei Ohtani. He's had one win since June 13th and only one win in his last 13 starts. He didn't win at all this month. He won once last month, and he won, you know, back-to-back on June 6th and June 13th. That's it. Like, we're not getting him run support. You know, to Terry's point, the last time that we won a game in which he pitched was July 11th. We are knocking on 2 months. We are a week away from 2 months. That's unacceptable. That's inexcusable. It should not be this bad. And yet somehow he's not figuring out. I mean, there were a couple of mistakes that he made for sure. I mean, the Eugenio Suarez with first pitch sweeping, you know, slider across the dish. He's been punishing us all series. 3-run dinger, that completely changed the course of the game. We're up 4-3 at the time, and then now we're down 6-4. And a couple other incidents may have been, you know, something to, you know, talk about, like, oh, too bad we did that instead of this. But you know what? In the grander scheme of things, I don't blame anybody for making the decisions they did in that game, you know. Masataka Yoshida running around trying to get three. Didn't work out. Do I blame him? No. He's been feeling himself. He's also been one of the hotter hitters that we've had on our team. It just did not work out. The Red Sox starting rotation, to Jeremy's point, has been one of the biggest talking points. This is the Boston Red Sox. This is one of the most storied franchises in professional sports, not just baseball, not only sports in New England, in all sports across the globe. If you mention Boston Red Sox or New York Yankees or Los Angeles Dodgers, it's the same as saying Los Angeles Lakers, Boston Celtics, New England Patriots, across the world. Everybody's going to know who they are. You say Tom Brady, people know who that is. It's embarrassing. Jeremy's absolutely right. This is embarrassing. You cannot afford to be one of those storied franchises and have five starters slotted for five spots. The Los Angeles Dodgers opened 2024 with nine starters. Nine. That's insane for the season, knowing full well some of them were not going to be starters. The Boston Red Sox, when they lost Lucas Giolito, there were some panic sounds coming around from fans, from us, from everybody, because that's just one. He hasn't thrown a pitch in the regular season. He's done. You got Pivetta. You don't know what's going to happen with him. Houck and Crawford, to both of your points, we've been talking about the innings issue. What are we supposed to do if we only have five arms for five spots? This opener stuff is cute. It's adorable, but that is not sustainable. We were not efficiently and effectively attacking an area that we do not have depth at for this season. We got spanked, and the season didn't even start before it became a problem. So, yeah, I mean, it's tough when starters do that, but we talked about it briefly earlier. If you're the starting rotation and you don't have seven or eight runs of support, you're probably not winning that game, because each starter is expected to almost allow three or four runs, because to Jeremy's point, once again, there is nobody here, gun to our heads, that is going to be a guaranteed lock for six plus, allowing one run or less on a consistent basis, even once every three games. I couldn't count on any one of those starters to do that. It's not being a pessimist. It's just fact. It's based on what we've seen. You know, the weather, to one of my points earlier, has been one factor, but you got to be able to make adjustments. You can't keep getting shelled start after start after start, because if all of the, I think pressure is the word I'm looking for, is on your offense and they have a rough game, they get three or four hits, yeah, you're going to get shelled. You're going to lose that game handedly. You know, we didn't do well against Houston. We just absolutely got outplayed by Arizona in every capacity. And Terry, you mentioned it. No first baseman. No Ketel Marte. I believe he's their second baseman. They're two best hitters. They're not there, and you can't win one game? That's just bad. There's just nothing else you can say besides that. Anything else that you gents want to add? All right. So for mine, this one's brutal. Josh Winkowski, three innings, six earned on eight hits, three strikeouts, a walk, gave up a home run, that big Mondo grand slam to Suarez. I don't know what to do anymore. This is his second, appearance that's just kind of fallen off in his last three. He didn't do well against Texas, and he's just had a really rough month of August. Is the weather part of the problem? I don't know, but either way, that's two out of three now. He's allowed nine earned runs in his last five innings of work. He's given up a couple of home runs. The walk number's not bad, only one, but I mean, 12 hits, nine runs, four strikeouts in five innings. If your goal is to become a starter, you're not really doing well in your audition. So brutal, just awful. The game was already in a bad place. And then that was like the Luis Garcia effect, which, newsflash, they inverted, like they completely inverted places. Luis Garcia didn't do poorly, but Winkowski got his doors blown off. So just brutal. It was really, really hard to watch this series. Terry, why don't you go first?
Yeah. I mean, coming into the season, we didn't really see Winkowski as a guy that was going to be critical in any aspect, just kind of a complimentary guy. And if we got really lucky, perhaps maybe he would kind of transition into a viable number five starter or perhaps end up being so electric that he was used in some eighth and ninth innings. But it hasn't been that type of a season. You know, if he had a long, successful future in MLB, I think he would be showing us more of that right now. But he hasn't, and it's unfortunate. Having said that, I mean, I'm sure he'll be a part of next year's roster, but my expectations for him long-term just aren't super, super high, so.
Jeremy.
It's tough because the amount of pitchers in the entirety of the bullpen and rotation that you can count on is like down to like three guys. Like you know what you're going to get. And Winkowski had been pitching well. He's not stretched out in any way. So he just hasn't been pitching a lot, but going back to losing the internet, not having it up anymore, he had one run or zero runs in seven straight appearances. A lot of those were multiple innings, and then it just came back. So starting on July 27th, one earned run, 0-1, 0-1, 1-0, and then 3-0-6, and his ERA since those two appearances went from a 3.35 to a 4.45. So August 12th, this would have been a totally different segment. But again, it's the wrong time. You know, Bayo completely chokes it away, and we already talked about the need for that to be a good start. And then Winkowski comes in to try to keep it close, and it becomes two touchdowns. So it's just, you know, it's not good. There's just so few guys. Kelly, you can rely on Kelly. You know, Kenley, Martin. I mean, Crawford was okay. But, I mean, there's just so few guys that you can count on.
Yeah, it's kind of the status of what's happening with our team. You know, we'll have three or four. One will have a good game. The other three will get their doors blown off. And that's just not sustainable. That's the problem. Anything else that you gents want to add to any of those duds? Right on. So, Terry, go ahead.
I was just going to say just a small nugget here.
Sure.
Since the All-Star break, this is just our pitching in general, rotation and bullpen. Where do you think we rank in MLB since the All-Star break?
Last.
Pitching? I'm going to say 23rd.
Jeremy was pretty close. We're 29th of all the teams.
Worse?
The White Sox. That's it. And actually, I'll tell you what, we're almost there. If we get shelled at all tomorrow, it's probably us. Because we have a 5.82 ERA since the All-Star break. The Chicago White Sox, 5.89. That's just one bad inning from...
That's tough.
That's...
And by the way, have already lost 100 games on the year as of August 25th. That's incredibly pathetic.
Yeah, and that's going to be – that's a sad organization, you know.
It's not going to get any better, guys.
Yeah.
It's going to get worse before it gets better there. So a couple other dishonorable mentions. Lucas Sims, not well, not doing so great. Two walks, a home run, gave up three earned runs on one hit, you heard me correctly, in one and a third innings, just not very consistent. Yoshida, I'm just going to call this an anomaly along with Duran. They combined to go 3-for-21 with three doubles, four strikeouts, a run scored, and an RBI. That's just an anomaly, just a couple things to talk about. You know, nothing too crazy. Jansen, 0-for-4 with a pair of strikeouts. And Cedan Rafael, another anomaly, 1-for-10 with four strikeouts and a single. So the hitting just wasn't there. I mean, O'Neill, you could even say that he was a dud really until that 102 mile an hour fastball came down the pipe in the ninth inning. He struck out the first three at bats of the game and then solo home run that he was really late on. You know, that pitch went due right. I don't know that guy all that well, but that flamethrower, is it Justin Martinez? He's electric. I mean, he throws absolute gas, and the home run that he gave up to Tyler O'Neill was just the second one he's given up all season. So it was just, I mean, it didn't matter what they did. They could do no wrong, and we got absolutely exposed. So unless there is no other dishonorable mentions, we'll flip it over to the other part of the show. Terry, Jeremy, anything else you want to add?
Just one last thing about Red Sox pitching. The starters only recorded 7 strikeouts on the series.
That's not going to get it done.
Doesn't get it done.
You know, as I've said before, you can't live on that. And when 2 of your starters end up walking more guys than they strike out, that's also another really weird one. We actually had 10 walks to 7 strikeouts. When's the last time the Red Sox walked more guys than they struck out in a series? Couldn't tell you. Don't even want to know. I don't even want to look it up. It's that sad. So we're going to flip it over to our tip the caps section instead of our studs section. So Terry, why don't you lead us off with who you think we should be tipping our cap to?
So this is something we're going to do for the opposing team specifically, if it's a losing series. And I'm going to give my tip of the cap to Torey Lovello, who is a guy I desperately wanted to be the manager of the Red Sox in 2017. So John Farrell went on his cancer leave in 2015. Lovello took over. When Lovello took over, we were the best team in baseball those 2 months. The only problem was all the damage had been done. And despite winning the most games those 2 months, we still finished last. But I thought, man, look at what Lovello is doing with not so much. And then you can't fire Farrell coming off of cancer. So in 2016, Farrell comes back. We make the playoffs but get swept. That was the perfect time to fire Farrell, make Lovello your manager. And this might be a bold take, but I think we might win the 2018 World Series, even with Lovello, with the additions that got made. You know, Cora obviously did a good job, but I just think Lovello had the personality to achieve a similar result. And you're really seeing it here in Arizona.
Terry.
Yeah.
2018.
Yeah.
I don't think Bugs Bunny or Santa Claus could have been the manager. That team was winning the World Series. It was so stacked.
It was special for sure.
It was special indeed.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the total payroll back in 2018 in relation to the rest of Major League Baseball? What number were we?
We were 2. Maybe number 1 because we had all that dead money. We were paying Pablo.
Sure.
Hanley was still on the books. Pedroia. It was like 245, which was well north of the tax, and still would be today by a
Correct.
Few million.
And what's our spend this year in 2024?
Where are we at right now?
Yeah.
Right around 230, I think.
I don't even think we're that high.
It's
I
close.
Really don't.
It's at least 225, I can promise you that, because we only had a handful of million to play with.
Oh my God. I really don't remember it being. Let me see here. I got to check. So, all right, 2018, opening day payroll, $233 million, to your point, $233 million. The 40-man roster is $239. Our opening day 26-man roster for 2024, $171 million. So
it was higher. We were over 200. Hang on, I'm getting the exact figures right now. If you go to at Red Sox payroll, they do a hell of a job with this. Pulling it up right now. So we are at...
Are you looking at Spotrac? Not Spotrac, something else.
No, something else. So we're at 229 at the moment. So I was pretty close.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me. And over 100 million is dead money.
Probably.
You know?
I mean, you're paying
easily.
17 to Sale.
How much are you paying to Giolito?
19, 22 to Story.
And 22 to Story, right? And then how much for 18 like all
to
the
Yoshida.
Other
assets? No, kidding.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for redacting that one. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, kind of. Yeah. I mean, he is a platoon DH after all. But yeah, so you're getting killed on a lot of deals. Well, Hendricks is 5. It all adds up.
Right. Jeremy, anything else you want to add to Torey?
We could do worse if we had Lovello as our manager. I was listening on and off to the radio this weekend because I was kind of in the car a lot. And he's just one of those guys that every time I hear him come up, he's universally spoken of well. And I'm happy for him as a result, because when you hear somebody's a good guy, it's easy to root for him. I'm not upset about not having him because I'm a Cora guy, and I think Cora is a very good manager. I mean, I'm envious of the Diamondbacks. They seemingly support the organization. They have talent literally everywhere, and they have a great manager. And, you know, I've been saying this more and more, but this is another team that I wish was my favorite team.
Yeah, it's nice when everything's working, all your toys are healthy, and there's like perfect cohesion. It's nice when
all their toys aren't healthy. They just have a well-built roster that is intended to understand that across 162 games, you don't have the same five starters. You don't have the same lineup every day. And if your organization is built to support the big league club, then this is what it looks like.
There you go. There you have it. Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that they are the best team in baseball right now over the last month or so. They've only lost like four or five games in the month of August. They got to the World Series last year, and I know the Phillies are all the rage, and I love the Phillies, and I'm probably rooting for the Phillies, but this could be the year for the Diamondbacks. I don't see why not. They have a very good rotation behind Gallen, Merrill Kelly. I know we kind of roughed him up today a little bit, but Eduardo Rodriguez is back. He's got a 3.94 ERA on just a handful of starts. He had a lap problem, something like that. But, yeah, he's made three starts and given up, let's see, I think, what, seven earned, something like that? Yeah, just seven earned runs across 16 innings. Why can't we get a guy like that? But yeah, so I just, and don't forget, he's a big game pitcher. Eduardo Rodriguez, he stepped up in the World Series against the Dodgers in 2018. He always owned the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. Very tough place to pitch. I could see Eduardo Rodriguez just absolute money. They did unfortunately whiff on the Jordan Montgomery signing, who just got relegated to the bullpen, but you can't win them all. But I don't see why they couldn't win the World Series.
Anything else that we want to add on this one? No? Cool. I'm not going to say that I'm a Cora guy. You know, he's our manager and we had to deal with it. I remember that when he took his 1 year sabbatical from baseball, his little vacation, I was not really in the camp of, yeah, let's bring him back. And then when he did come back, Terry, correct me if I'm wrong, but you and I were aligned that we were cool if he was gone and we had somebody else come in. I don't believe that you and I were on opposite sides of this one.
I was not like super strongly, but I was anti-Cora.
I was pretty much against it too. Yeah. So long story short, he comes back. He's done a heck of a job with the team. And I think the team does do better work for him than some of our prior managers. You know, I don't think Bobby Valentine would have been able to generate this kind of production from this team. I think you'd see a bunch of 200 to 230 hitters and everybody either not playing well / way unhealthy, out of position, just was a hot mess. So, yeah, I mean, if Lovello was here, I think the team would be perhaps doing a little bit better. I could be completely wrong. But one thing's for sure, you can't blame Alex Cora for, you know, half of the losses that we've had this year. And it's because of poor roster construction. Alex Cora is not in charge of roster construction. That's somebody else's responsibility. He's left to play with certain toys that have, you know, batteries that are used up or, you know, a broken, you know, swing or hitch. And you're just left with certain pieces that you have no choice to play, even if they're not going to, you know, do great. So it's tough. But I'd love to know what would have happened if he was here. It will never happen. I don't think Lovello is ever going to come back to Boston. I think his career is going to end in Arizona, whenever that is. He'll decide. Anything else that we want to add on Lovello? Perfect. Jeremy, why won't you hit us with your tip, your cap?
So I'm going with Eugenio Suarez. This guy was unbelievable this weekend, and I've been diving into his career, and some of this stuff absolutely fascinates me. So With regards to this weekend, he went 8 of 13 with 10 RBIs, 2 home runs, and a double. Let me ask you guys, how many career home runs does this guy have? Quick guess.
Over 200.
5 seconds or less?
Over 200. I'd say 215, 210. I mean, he's boom or bust. He's home run or strikeout. That's it.
Terry? He's like a poor man's Kyle Schwarber. I'll go a little under. I'll say 178.
265.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
So he hit 49 in 2019, hit 271 that year. 103 ribbies, had 104 ribbies in 18. This guy's put together a pretty good career. 806 career RBIs in his career. I mean, this guy can hit. I could go further because I've been nerding out over his stats a little bit, especially as it timed up with his contract. But, yeah, I mean, this guy was a killer. I've already mentioned the non-competitive pitch to Hauk. From Hauk on Sunday that ended up on the Coke bottles, or should have ended up on the Coke bottles if they were still up there. So, I mean, totally impressed by this guy, obviously.
Terry?
Yeah, I mean, he spent most of his career with the Cincinnati Reds. And I think didn't he go to the Mariners? Yeah, he was with the Mariners for a couple of years. And The knock on him, not super high for average. He has led all of MLB in strikeouts 3 times in his career. So that's kind of where I get the poor man's Kyle Schwarber. But he does consistently hit, you know, 80 to 100 points. He gets on base 80 to 100 points higher than his batting average. So there certainly is a role for him on a lot of teams. And he certainly found a home here in Arizona. What was his contract? Let me see. I can pull that up right now. So
I think it was a 1 or 2 year million. Deal. Oh, I thought it was only a 1 year deal or 2 year deal.
Did I get that? After the big year with Cincinnati, he signed, I believe it was 6 years, $66 million.
Wow.
Okay, so he's making 11 this year, and then there's a $15 million team option on him in 2025 with a $2 million buyout. I suspect they'll probably pick that up. I'm not super...
For $15 million, they absolutely will.
Yeah.
25 homers, 80-90 RBIs. He might hit 220, 225. He's towards the end of his career, but $15 million for that, that's quality. Teoscar Hernandez is going to get close to double that. Some team's going to overpay. They're going to give him 27, 28 million.
Yeah. And I don't know the Arizona pipeline as far as what they have for prospects, but for one more year, I don't see why not.
One thing you also forgot to mention is that this guy is an Ironman. He doesn't miss time, you know, from 2016, he missed 3 games, 2017, only 6 games, 2018, did have a little bit of time missed, 143, but he played in 150 or more games in, let's see, 6 of his last 9 years, actually 8 years. I'm not going to count COVID. And he'll probably hit 150 for this one as well. So the guy is durable too. You know, usually these big block figures, they're going to hit a lot of home runs. They're going to strike out a lot, as you mentioned earlier as well. But I mean, this is the type of guy where you could probably, you might break a baseball if you throw at him. He's just super durable. And gone are the days where, you know, you have the Ironman that would play 155 to 160 games a year. This is one of those guys. So yeah, I mean, who's not going to give $15 million for a guy who plays basically every single game of the season at the hot corner? He plays one of the hardest positions in baseball. Why wouldn't they, you know? So to Jeremy's point, 8 for 13 in a series against any team is incredible. He's not going to do that every series, but 8 for 13, 5 singles, a double, 2 dingers, and 10 RBIs. You averaged 3 RBIs a game, almost 2 runs a game. You absolutely did your job. And anybody who says otherwise is just not paying attention. He went 4 for 4 in the third game. I was talking about this earlier. I don't know when it was that I called you, Terry. I think it was after the home run. But Hauk just has this slider go middle, middle, middle out. And it's first pitch to him with 2 on, moonshot, left field. And as soon as it left the bat, I knew it. And everybody else did too. Anyone else who didn't think so, not paying attention, really don't know Fenway Park. But he just, he's on it. And he's had a really, really good month in relation to, you know, his norm. Last month, he also did really, really well. He had 10 homers, 27 RBIs, and hit 333, which is insane considering the month prior, he only hit 156. Somebody like that with the, you know, Houston Astros, Jose Abreu was DFA'd. There's a chance he could have been gone. And he just completely flips it around for the month of July. And this month, three homers, 17 RBIs. Most of that damage, or excuse me, before today's action, he was able to bump that batting average up. Let's see, he's now back up to 287. So he went from 253 to 287 for the month of August. He's had quality back-to-back months. Four homers, 20 RBIs. You match that with last month, 10 homers, 27 RBIs. There's still a couple days to go. He's doing his job, man. I mean, you could look back at all of the other series that he's played in. He has not done what he did against the Boston Red Sox. Actually, I stand corrected. Against the Washington Nationals, he had a three-homer game at the end of July. So I do stand corrected there. He went 7-for-13 in that series with three homers and five RBIs. All the damage pretty much was done in that second game. But this is the type of guy that can go out and, you know, club a couple home runs and be a potential game changer. Is he going to hit 300 the rest of the season? No. Is he going to, you know, steal bases and blow you away that way? No. But he's going to play the hot corner. He's going to give you good defense. He's going to hit 25 to probably 27 home runs, and he'll probably get close to 100 RBIs. I honestly think he's probably going to be in that 26 to 95 range. You know, probably finish up around 240 to between 235 and 245. You know, there's not going to be too much of a change going up or down. Absolute tip your cap character guy, however you want to say it. I mean, the guy just went off. He did not miss. And when he missed, it was by a little bit. That's how it felt. I don't know why we pitched to him with one out and with an available bag there. You had a ground out right after that home run. You might have had the bases loaded and thrown home, and the bases are still juiced. Now you have two outs, and the batter right after that, fly out. So instead of a 6-4 game at the time, it could have been 4-3 still. And with the extra run that we scored and the extra run that they scored, we might have been able to win the third game of this series. So it's really, really unfortunate that we didn't win any of the games in this series. But a game-changing player that can do things like this, it's like Tyler O'Neill in the month of April, where he was hitting home runs whenever he wanted to, can change the game. He can alter the result of a game with the swing of a bat. And two games in this series had a home run and a minimum of three RBIs. So absolutely incredible. He's going to continue doing it. So, yeah, Terry.
Just to wrap it up on him, he drove in 10 runs this series, as Jeremy said. The Red Sox, as an entire team, drove in 8. He beat us all by himself.
Yeah, you're not gonna be able to win when that type of stuff happens against you. You know, and we talked about this earlier as well. If the Boston Red Sox are not scoring a minimum of 6 to 7 runs in a game, they are not going to win that game. Game 3, opposing team scores 7. We do not win. Game 2, they only score 4, but we only score 1. Obviously didn't win that game. Opposing team scores 12 in the first game and completely blew the doors off. We're not winning that game either. So anything else that we want to add for either one of those two? Excellent. That is going to wrap it for all the bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.